Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
I'm joined now by a Hollywood power couple, acting legend Jane Seymour and musician and producer John Zambetti. Good morning and welcome back.
Hello.
Thank you. Good to be back.
I feel this is becoming our annual catch-up. Jane, you were in Dublin last year filming Harry Wilde and you brought your new partner John in to meet us. You're back now filming another season of Harry Wilde and it has lasted. John is still here. You got a second season.
Amazing,
John.
Amazing.
So 2 years now, Jane. Is this getting serious? Are you settling down finally?
We are very settled.
Yes.
Yeah, we are. We like to celebrate our anniversary every month because we figure at our age we're not going to risk a whole year.
It's so. Like dog years.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're actually 24, 25 years together now.
26. Yes. Just had 26. Our 26th.
Okay. Congratulations. Are you back staying in Dalkey?
Yes, we. Yeah, we love it there. We've got an enormous number of wonderful friends there, a lot of musicians as well. And actually, I did another show in Dalkey this year as well. We've been here 3 times for 3 months each time. The other one was called 12 Dates Till Christmas. It's a 6-hour movie for Hallmark in America for Christmas.
Fantastic. Is it out for this Christmas?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Comes out in a couple of weeks, as does a 2-hour special that we shot of Harry Wilde. So in America, I think the November 24th.
It'll be on the RTE player and RTE here.
It is on RTE.
Yeah. Yes. Ye love it here, John D.
I do indeed. You know, there seems to be, it's interesting, in my mind, there seems to be like a pervasive kindness amongst people here, which sadly, with such polarization in the States, is gone. And it's really refreshing. People are very aware of each other, even just the little things. You know, you're walking down the sidewalk, an elderly couple's coming the other way or someone pushing a tram. People get step off the sidewalk to let them come by. It's like people are, they're preemptively kind. And it's amazing to
that
to
is really nice to hear because I think we can be hard on ourselves here.
So yeah, yeah.
It's nice to know from an outsider's perspective. So, John, you're launching your new album this
correct,
week.
Correct, yes.
So we've asked you both to pick a few songs that soundtracked each of your lives. You clearly couldn't agree on 5 together. So we kind of jumped between you. Jane, your first choice is Live and Let Die by Paul McCartney and Wings. And of course, this was the theme tune to the 1973 Bond film of the same name. And Jane, you were cast as a Bond girl, Solitaire, in that film. You were only 20. What was that like to get such a huge role, such huge exposure at such a young age?
I think I was the only actress in England that was not trying for that role. And I actually wasn't available. I was starring in a series called The Enidan Line, which was my first proper thing.
Yeah.
And the first episode came out on BBC and the Bond people called my agent and said, we want to meet Jane Seymour. And he said, quite rightly, she's not available. She's filming a series. Then the second week, Cubby Broccoli called and said, we want to meet Jane Seymour. My agent said, well, they make other films. You might as well meet them. So I met them. Somehow the BBC were persuaded to let me out for 2 weeks so I could start the Bond film, finish the BBC series, and then go on to do it. But I was 20 years old, as green as they come, and I don't even know how I did it, but I did.
And it was Roger Moore's first Bond film.
Bond film. So, you know, they were concerned about him not raising his eyebrow. They did. Of course, it was something he couldn't not do. But Roger was absolutely lovely. It was an amazing experience. I mean, to go headlong into being a Bond girl. And to this day, as far as England's concerned, I think it's probably the only thing I've ever done, in their opinion.
Really?
Yes. Funny.
And did Roger Moore, he would have been more experienced in the business. Did he look after you well?
Oh, he looked after me brilliantly. He was lovely and very funny, very witty, and became a really good friend. Lovely guy.
Did you fall asleep doing a love scene?
I did. Well, it takes forever to fix the lights, move the cameras. I didn't realize that. But I was lying there in bed and waiting to do the scene. And I fell asleep, so they didn't wake me up. They just kept moving the cameras and the lights. And the next thing I know, you know, Roger climbed in bed and handed me a cup of tea. there's this magical photograph of the two of us having a cup of tea when he's supposedly, you know, doing a scene in which he deflowers the virgins. solitaire and takes all her powers away.
Okay, different times.
Yes.
Different times. John, do you remember seeing Live and Let Die in the movie?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Then?
Yes, indeed.
Do you remember noticing Jane?
Oh, yeah. I remember thinking to myself, that Roger guy's way too old for her. She needs someone closer in age.
Yeah.
Like
and,
me.
And listen, you hung around and you all good things come to those who wait. Yeah. Were you a Paul McCartney fan?
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, Beatles was everything.
Tell them about
everything.
The
I will. Yeah. I will. And so they had the premiere in Leicester Square. And I'm coming out. This is like the biggest moment of my life. And I'm walking out and I get this little tap, tap on the back of my shoulder. And I turn around and I hear this voice and says, just wanted to tell you, I thought you were wonderful. I had been touched by a Beatle, not just a Beatle, the Beatle. Because at that time I was a huge, you know, it was either John or Paul or George. But I couldn't believe it. Paul touched me. Anyway, I've had the opportunity to see and get to know Paul quite well since then. Every time I see him, we laugh about the fact that, you know, I nearly melted into the ground, which I'm sure he was used to if he ever...
You've finessed your Paul impersonation very well.
Oh, well, thank you. I haven't done it in a while, but he's a lovely guy. And I that song is such an amazing song.
Yeah. Fantastic. It is. Let's have a listen. Here's Jane Seymour's first choice. This is Wings, Live and Let Die.
If this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in a cry, say live and let die.
Wings, Live and Let Die, and that is Jane Seymour's first choice in our kind of Mr. and Mrs. Music choices today. So, John Zambetti, your turn now. John, people may remember from the last time that you have a kind of a stellar music pedigree going back to the 60s. Now, your band, The Malibus, was big on the East Coast surf music scene, am I right?
Correct.
And what you have chosen as your first song is a West Coast kind of surf anthem. So why the Beach Boys, Don't Worry Baby?
Well, you know, when this is kind of pre-Beatles, early 60s, and surf music was very big in the United States. And I think it was relatively big in Europe too with the Beach Boys. And so we were really aficionados of that. But back in those days when you had a band, it was really about putting together something with your mates. It wasn't like today with a boy band where they auditioned 50 people to see who's going to be in. It was like, you know, you're my mate. You're going to be the bass player. I'm going to teach you how to play bass.
Yeah.
You know, you're a pretty good golfer. You have coordination. You're going to be the drummer. I'm going to teach you to be. So this is, and you know, you two is not that different, by the way. It's just mates. Anyway, but that's another story. So the point is, so I was the person that I was running the band, so I had to put the songs together, which meant I had to take the songs apart to teach people their parts. Mm-hmm. And in those times, most rock songs were very simple. We would call them 1-4-5 songs. So you'd have the tonic, the subdominant, and the dominant, meaning like if in the key of E, it would be E, A, and B. And if you were fancy me, you might do a B7th, you know, whatever. But most songs were pretty much those three chords.
Yeah.
Along comes Brian Wilson.
Yeah.
And Don't Worry Baby, and of course it's E, A, B. But then suddenly F sharp minor to B, and then G sharp minor to C sharp major. Now, for the music officials out there, they know the relative minor to E is C sharp minor, not C sharp major. So he was breaking all the rules. The other thing is most bands did what we used to call barbershop harmonies, where you would do usually a chord as a triad of three notes. So if you had a C chord, it would be C, E, and G. And so what would happen is the harmonies would be C,
ba, ba, ba.
Exactly right. Yeah. That would be it. And they, and then if you, the chord switched to F, all of that would move up to F, A, C. But the Beach Boys had interwoven their harmonies. So they didn't just stick to one line and just keep that line progressing throughout the song. The other thing is that really influenced me as a writer, Don't Worry Baby is actually taken from the scene in Rebel Without a Cause with James Dean and Natalie Wood, where there's a car scene there where these guys talk too much about their cars, and they're like, and James Dean's trying to be accepted, and he's new to the neighborhood, trying to be accepted, and he's talking about what a great car he's got, and so he ends up getting in this car race, and it's a chicken race, meaning that they drive to the edge of the cliff, and whoever jumps out the last wins. Well, as you know, the antagonist gets his sleeve caught and ends up going over the cliff and dying. But anyway, that cinematic thing prompted Brian to write his own thing. And so it's really, it's a beautiful song. It's really just about a guy bragging about his car, but his, and he realizes he's bragged too much, and now he's got to put up or shut up.
Yeah.
His girlfriend is saying, don't worry, baby, it's going to be okay. I'm here with you. And it's a beautiful little teenage movie about growing up and bragging and being rooted with your, having your, your girlfriend.
Or written by a guy who heard things in his head,
yeah,
that nobody had really ever,
right,
heard up to that
and
point.
And breaking every rule,
yeah,
in music.
Okay. And now we will listen to it with completely new ears. So this is John Zambetti's choice today. Don't Worry Baby by the Beach Boys. That was an education, wasn't it? When you listen to it there, having heard, yeah, John Zambetti's symposium on it, it's actually, it's not that kind of throwaway little, you know, easy pop song we thought it was. So that was John Zambetti's turn. Now, Jane Seymour, your turn again to pick a song. And your next choice is the theme from the 1980 film Somewhere in Time. And you starred in this movie with the late, great Christopher Reeves. And why have you chosen this one today?
Well, we made this absolutely beautiful movie. I think one of the most favorite experiences I've ever had in my life was making this beautiful love story, Somewhere in Time. And if you haven't seen it, it's worth seeing, because people don't watch it once. They watch it 25 times, 100 times. They become obsessed with it. But what really made the movie was when it was finished, and we made it for a very small budget. Universal, who made it, weren't even hardly going to distribute it, and they certainly didn't have any money for a soundtrack. But I happened to be a teenage kid who befriended John Barry, the composer, and remained very close friends with him my whole life. And he got married, and I was friends with his wife and everything. I showed his wife, I said, look, I've made this movie and it's screaming for a John Barry score, but they can't even afford the phone call. And she got hold of him and showed him the movie, and he fell in love with the movie. And he said, you know what? I don't care. I'll just do this for free and I'll just have the back end. So if it ever sells any records or anything, I'll just take that. But I'm going to do this so it doesn't cost the film company. So that was very unusual to ever do that. And so he made this incredible score. I mean, it's a score that people get married to. Every piano place I go to in the world, the pianist is playing the piano, looks at me and curses because it's apparently so impossible to play. It is everybody's favorite thing, and it made that movie. And John Barry became our closest friend, young
Did
kid,
you
and said.
You also fall in love with Christopher Reeve.
And I fell madly in love with Christopher Reeve, which I could never talk about. We had a pact, the two of us, we were never going to let anyone know. until he spoke with his children about it later in life. But Chris Reeve and
he broke up before the film was finished, did he?
No, he had broken up before he started the film. We were both single at the time. Then he found out that his girlfriend, who he'd been broken up with, was actually pregnant when she was very pregnant. And he didn't find out about it. She waited a long time to tell him.
And
went back to do, we all tried to do the right thing. Yes. So that's what happened there. But
you stayed friends?
Until the day he died. Very, very close. And very close to Dana, his wife, who was a remarkable woman. She was extraordinary. And when Chris, after the accident, couldn't go to some events and things, Dana would call me up and say, would you come because Chris adores you and loves spending time with you, and would you kind of do what I would do and run interference for him and, you know, give him a drink and have a joke and a smile
and how was he in those days? People will remember he was paralyzed from the neck down in a riding accident.
So he was on a breathing machine, on every machine known to man. I mean, he had two people literally dealing with the physical elements of him staying alive 24/7.
Which must have been very hard for someone like him. Hard for anyone, but
hard for anyone, but especially him, because you know he liked to sail alone. He liked to fly an aeroplane alone. He liked to ride horses alone. You know, he loved to be alone, and he could never be alone again. But we would have amazing conversations, and literally until just weeks before he passed, about life and about what was important in life, and we would laugh and joke, and he was an incredible inspiration to me. My life. And, you know, it was so beautiful because what brought us together was this film, and it was about a love that couldn't happen because it was different time and space. And somehow, in a funny way, that's really kind of what happened to us in our relationship. But the beauty of our relationship was that we were able to continue as the closest of friends forever.
So this is Jane Seymour's next choice today, Somewhere in Time by John Barry. That is Jane Seymour's next choice. That brought you back, did it?
The whole album is just magnificent. And yes, it does. It just gives me chills. And I cry every time I watch that movie. And it's considered one of the great romance movies of all time.
Okay, so Somewhere in Time, there's a movie to check out.
Yep.
John Zambetti, your next choice is Fleetwood Mac, Sisters of the Moon.
Yeah.
So take me back to 1979 and explain your embroilment with Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, this actually goes back a little bit before that because, as mentioned before, I had my band in high school with my classmate, Walter Egan. Walter ended up getting signed to a solo deal with Columbia Records. And I was in New York, he was in California. He said, come out and do the album. So we were working at a studio called Sound City in Van Nuys, and someone recommended us a young man there who was a writer named Lindsey Buckingham. Lindsey was just coming in to Fleetwood Mac with Stevie. So Lindsey and Stevie produced the first album, which was moderately successful. And then the second album, which is this is a Walter Egan band, had the hit Magnet and Steel, which was the million-selling hit for Walter, but Lindsey and Stevie were on that record. And as we're going in to do the last record, this was at the same time that Fleetwood Mac was recording Rumors. So there's all this intrigue and insanity, you can imagine, going on. This is about 1978. So we go into the studio. Lindsey had broken up with Stevie, and Walter started dating her. So it's like Lindsey is like one of those, like, I don't want her, but you can't have her kind of deals.
Okay.
So Walter love this song, Sisters of the Moon, which Fleetwood Mac had not recorded. They didn't record it till 1979, to their Tusk album. Lindsay had thrown the song out. So
okay. Stevie wrote the song.
Yeah. So Lindsay Walter came in with Sisters of the Moon. He wanted to record it. Lindsay said, absolutely not. You're not recording that song. Go home and write a song. So Walter wrote the song. At the time, we had a financial issue, so I have some of the publishing on it. But the point of the matter is, we wrote a song about being in bands, there's a little verse about the Malibus, and I do a duet with Walter singing on this record. And it turned out to be the most covered of Walter's tunes ever. About 4 years ago, we got a call. Dr. Dre decided to use Hot Summer Nights as the basis for Eminem's comeback single, We Made You. But just shows there is some, you know, people were talking about rap and hip hop and whatever, gangsters and whatever. But these guys were very businessmen, and they were very fair in seeking out and giving us a percentage of that that song.
Yeah, an extraordinary thread there. Okay, yeah. So here's John Zambetti's next choice. This is Fleetwood Mac and Sisters of the Moon. So that's Fleetwood Mac, Sisters of the Moon, the Fleetwood Mac song that Lindsay Buckingham didn't want until someone else wanted it. That's Eddie's next choice today. So, John, later today, you're throwing a listening party in Dalkey for your new solo album. It's called
Evocation.
Yeah. So how many of the songs are inspired by Jane?
Well, quite a few, actually. In fact, she actually sings on one.
Really?
Yeah.
You got roped in for backing vocals?
Yeah. It's more
of a good
spoken.
But we talked about a different song, another song called A While, last time we were here.
Yeah.
About
that's
me writing the song. And now we've properly recorded. That's on this album as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he's done a beautiful one called She's Just a Girl that's really beautiful. And a friend of mine who's an amazing, famous choreographer is created. I'm going to try and do a little ballet to that one day when I have spare time.
Can you still bust out your ballet?
I can bust out a few moves, and I worked with this guy when I was 13, and now he knows me at 70 almost.
Well, mention his name. Stevenson.
He was a very famous ballet dancer, very famous choreographer. He ran the Houston Ballet for 25 years and Ballet Texas, and you know, he danced with Margot Fonteyn. So I said, you know, you and I. And so we're not getting any younger. It's time for me to do my last dance. But I played this beautiful song he did.
Jane, you're loving this. You're at this stage of life. You've become a groupie. You're in music videos. You're hanging around with the band.
Yeah.
And we shot the video down at Collamore Harbor in Dalkey.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yes, we did. I was shooting the other day, and it was blustery, and the sun came out. It was funny. And you could clearly see it's me with a handheld. You know.
There's clips of it on Spotify and stuff. If you go to look at the songs, you'll see the clips of the video.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the Johnny Zed Band.
And then back to LA in time for Thanksgiving. Will your families come together? Are we at that stage of things yet?
Yes.
We would, except his family is so huge that they've decided there's 25 of them or something. So for actual Thanksgiving itself, he will be in San Diego with his lot.
But
we vow this is not going to happen every year.
Right.
Okay.
And I have an extended family of people that are coming to mind. But the rest of this season, we will all be together.
Yeah, but our kids put us together. So there's that. There's a conglomeration of that getting together with the families.
So the final music choice is is Johnny Cash, I Walk the Line. And Jane, I think this is more your choice. Of course, you were lucky enough to know Johnny Cash. People will remember he used to guest star a lot on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
So, yes, Johnny came on in the first season and June was there, you know, for support. And Johnny just had some terrible dental surgery or jaw surgery. And he was in a lot of pain and having a lot of difficulty. And my then husband, James Keach, was asked to direct him in this and did an amazing job with him. And Johnny and June and James and I became incredibly close friends in that week and a half. And Johnny turned to James and I and said, you know, he said, somebody's going to make a story in my life and they don't know what it is. And he said, there's a lot of stories out there about Johnny Cash and they ain't true. And of course, I've worked with Willie Nelson and I was really good friends also with Kris Kristofferson. So I've heard the stories from every which way. Anyway, long story short, they gave us the rights to his story, to his and June's story. And then we worked on it for 11 years, got a script developed. We lived with them in Hendersonville, which is near Nashville. We lived with them in Jamaica. I got June to give me all the secrets that Johnny didn't know. He said, don't you go telling Johnny these things. You don't know about these things. And Johnny would tell James what I referred to as the gnarly truth. Johnny said, what's that? I said, that's the truth and then some. I said, but you can trust us because we will only put in the movie what's right. We're not going to break anybody's. Yeah. But if you watch the movie, we definitely put elements of things we were not allowed to say in it subtly. So you could find out things about maybe June knew Elvis and, you know, and how difficult Johnny's father was and stuff like that. But it was an amazing movie. At the last minute, Jim Mangold, director, just done Girl Interrupted, so he could get it greenlit and made. When we tried to get it made, they kept coming to us and saying, no one cares about Johnny Cash.
Wow.
Is that amazing?
Yeah.
But my son...
Did Johnny at peace with himself at that point in his life? Yeah.
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, we spent an enormous amount of time with him. The love between he and June was extraordinary. We were able to read the finished script to them and tell them that Joaquin and Reese were playing the characters. I could make a whole movie just about our relationship with Johnny and June because it was pretty extraordinary. But I had twins and Johnny and June decided they wanted to be godparents to one of them. So one of them was called Johnny Keach after Johnny Cash. And he's the one that randomly has become an amazing singer-songwriter in his own right. Amazing.
You've spent your life really with lots of musicians around you. You were saying to me earlier as well, you made the Glen Campbell film.
Yes, I'll Be Me. I made that film, that documentary. I'm credited as exec producer. They weren't allowed to put that apparently on Walk the Line, even though I was involved with that to the very end.
But, and you got to know Glen well as well?
Very well, and still very, very close friends with their entire family. And we shot every single one of those concerts he did, of the shows he did. I think 140 of them.
It's such an extraordinarily moving film.
Fantastic, isn't it?
It is terrific.
I was with him all the time. We shot most of it actually in my house.
Wow.
Yeah. And he really didn't know, you know, who anyone or anyone was. And even when he was in the nursing home at the end, my son, Johnny, the one I told you about, Johnny Keach, he came with me one day and Glenn was just looking at nowhere. And there was a guitar next to him. And Johnny started playing one of his songs. Well, not Glenn's songs, one of his songs that no one's ever heard. And Glenn turned to him and started singing harmony. And Kim Campbell looked at me.
So the music would bring him back
every
time. Yes,
and Kim Campbell said, I've never seen this. He said, I have never seen anything like this. He has never heard this song. He hasn't played the guitar or sung or done anything. And he just turned to Johnny and started singing, trying to sing harmony to him. And my little kid, Johnny Keach, said, Mom, I'm coming back because I want to sing for Glenn Campbell.
Wow.
It was so beautiful. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yes, there's been a lot of music around my life.
Yeah. What an extraordinary, lucky life.
Incredible. Yes, very much so.
Jane Seymour and John Zambetti, thank you both very much. Enjoy the rest of your stay in Ireland. And John, good luck with
thank
the
you.
Album launch today. So we'll finish now on your final music choice. Do you know why Johnny Cash hums in this? He hums to get the pitch each time. Because if you listen now... Every verse is in a slightly different key, so
that's
the humming
right.
is
that's
purely
right. yeah, yeah.
necessary. Johnny Cash, I Walk the Line.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. I find it very, very easy to be true. I find myself alone when each day's through. Yes, I'll admit that I'm a fool for you. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.